This season, Toyota Racing is looking for jugglers.
Aha!
Not the ones who toss balls or rings. Fans that can juggle the rigors of a 10-month-long season across many different racing circuits.
Well, what if I added knives?
What if you added GR Cup, Formula Drift, and off-road racing? If you can juggle it all, then we want you. Be part of the action at toyota.com/racing. Toyota, let's go places. Formula Drift is a registered trademark of Formula Drifts Holdings, LLC.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at zonepouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone. With Zone Nicotine Pouches.
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live.
There's heavy side-by-side lap traffic in front of the battle for the race lead. Here they come off turn four. White flag is in the air. It's Christian Eckes in the lead.
Lap traffic ahead for Christian Eckes. He'll go to the bottom. Kyle Busch remains in the outside lane. William Sawalich ahead. They enter turn three.
Here comes Eckes for the final time down to the bottom side of turns three and four. Christian Eckes wins at Bristol.
Last year you led 150 laps. You didn't lead quite 150, but you led a lot of them here tonight. You got the job done. You got the one that matters. That's right. Congratulations.
Yeah, man. What a thrill to be back in victory lane. I just touched on it in the box interview. It's been a rough couple races, and you know, to come back and redeem ourselves was our number one priority. And not only that, but Bristol last year too. So there's a lot behind this win. But overall, just super proud of everybody here.
NASCAR Live is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. From the MRN studios in Concord, North Carolina, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NASCAR Live here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you as we're all coming off an old school weekend at Bristol. Tire wear, a premium. Drivers sawing on the steering wheels of their race car, slipping and sliding all over the place. Denny Hamlin surviving to pick up his first win of the year. Now these drivers, pardon the pun, will have to shift gears as we get set to take off for Circuit of the Americas and a trip to Austin, Texas this weekend. Coming up on tonight's show, fresh off a top five finish at Bristol, Alex Bowman will stop by. He'll chat with our Chris Wilner. Last year's COTA winner Tyler Reddick will sit down with Jason Toy, perhaps maybe giving Jason the secret sauce of winning there. AJ Allmendinger will join Kim Kuhn ahead of pulling double duty this weekend. And, well, we'll explore into the NCAA men's basketball tournament conversation about buzzer beaters. You know, the tournament started today. Well, we're going to check out some of the best buzzer beaters in NASCAR history. But first, Kyle Rickey is here with a check of the latest headlines in NASCAR. Kyle?
Mike, the entry lists are out for NASCAR's visit to the Circuit of the Americas this weekend, and quite a few NASCAR Cup Series regulars will be pulling double duty. Ross Chastain will be the only full-time Cup Series driver to compete in this weekend's NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series Xpel 225. Chastain will pilot the number 45 truck for Nice Motorsports. In Xfinity action, Kyle Larson will pilot the number 17 for Hendrick Motorsports. Ty Gibbs will be back behind the wheel of the number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing, and John Hunter Nemechek will drive the number 20 for JGR as well. A few familiar faces will be back in the NASCAR Cup Series this weekend. AJ Allmendinger will make his third start of the season for Colleg Racing, and Shane Van Gisbergen will also compete for the organization. It's Van Gisbergen's first start since the Indianapolis Road Course last summer. And for the first time since 2022, MBM Motorsports is returning to NASCAR Cup Series action. Timmy Hill will be behind the wheel of the entry as the team's last attempt to run was in the 2022 Daytona 500, where they failed to make the field. Mike.
Thank you, Kyle. Coming up, Tyler Reddick will join us.
Craftsman in your hand, not to stop me, yeah. Not a chair, creaky stand, or even engine repair. Craftsman in your hand, nothing you can't do. Make a lawn, make it John.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Last year's Cup Series race at Circuit of the Americas is remembered for its wild restarts near the end of the race, but those restarts never impacted the driver who was the class of the field the majority of the afternoon. And we're speaking of Tyler Reddick. Tyler sat down with our Jason Toy to tell us what it's going to take to win there for the second straight year.
Tyler Reddick is ready to cap off the drive of his life here at Road America.
He makes his way up off the final corner in the middle of the racetrack. He has to climb the hill through the gearbox one more time. He'll crest the hill, checkered flag in the air, and for the first time in his career, Tyler Reddick has won at the NASCAR Cup Series level.
All right, Tyler, as we get ready to go back into Dakota this week, a place obviously you had success. You picked up the victory there this early part of the season. When you go back and look at last year for you guys, first couple of weeks wasn't the greatest, and then you picked up that stride. You're in that stretch right now as you go to Dakota. How excited are you?
Yeah, you know, for us, last year that stretch was tough, but, you know, I got to give it to my car chief, Rambo. He really pulled it together there, and we were able to get out of that hole. Just a huge testament to everything, you know, all the work and effort him and the rest of my guys put in. You know, he's a great leader, and after that tough start, he really put it on his back and said, "All right, guys, we're going to go out here and get after it." So, yeah, it was fun to go in Dakota and dominate like that, have a really fast race car. I don't even think Rambo slept that week. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun for sure. So it was cool to go win that race like that, have Kurt be a part of it. But, yeah, let's go back and do it again, right?
When you talk about the car chief, you talk about the team, and talk about you and this when you go to Dakota. It's a track that gives you a lot of challenges. You got elevation changes. You got tight corners, heavy braking. Is it hard to get the car set up to be perfect at every part of that track, or are you going to give up some somewhere and to pick up in others?
Yeah, certainly. But you just try and prioritize what's going to be best for lap time, and then kind of go from there. With the areas of the track, sections that have been repaved, it's going to change that a little bit. Certainly, I think the areas where lap time is to be made is going to remain the same, but I think some of the things you bring in your race car will change around with the grip differences we're going to have. That's what comes to mind for me.
When you go back to a track like this, and obviously with the victory last year, you got a lot of great notes to go back to it. And this track, only besides sitting in the heat a lot, really doesn't change too much for you, does it?
No, it certainly does. I think of all the racetracks that we go to throughout the year, I mean, that and probably the Charlotte Roval Infield, I mean, those two venues get a lot of laps on their, you know, respective courses. Dakota has a lot of events, a lot of track days, a lot of series come through there throughout the year, and a lot of times I've gone to that racetrack and, you know, a section's been repaved in, let's say, the last year, and you can't even tell anymore because it's been worn in and used so much. So it's definitely a track where it gets a lot of laps throughout the year, so it does change a lot from the time we go to the time next year.
Eric Jones throws the block on Hamlin out of two. Hamlin tries to the inside but can't. Tyler Reddick will lead the field off the end of the back straightaway for the final time.
Front when it mattered the most, and here he comes off four, checkered flag waving at the start finish line, and Tyler Reddick will score the win in the Hollywood Casino 400.
This time for you guys going back though for 2311 racing, you're gonna have a third teammate with you here with you, and Kobayashi's gonna be driving another Toyota for you out there. He has a lot of track experience there between Formula One and the World Endurance Challenge cars too. So does it help having a third teammate out there, especially when it's got that knows that track pretty well?
It's added pressure. You know, I believe in his ability and what I've seen him do in a short time in the next gen car. You know, I think back to his test he was able to have at VIR, his rookie test, and just how quickly he's able to adapt to this car really impressed me. I know for him, Indy didn't go well. Certainly not as well as he wanted it to, but it was a learning experience for sure, and on a track that, you know, I as far as I believe at the time, he hadn't had any laps on. So Dakota's more familiar. It's more of a traditional road course. Indy's kind of its own animal. So I do expect him to do well. I'm excited to see what he has for pace.
You praised your crew earlier, and one of the big things for you guys with 2311, the progression of building the program. You guys moved into the facility now. You've gotten everything built up. What's it like during the week now for you guys prior to getting to the track? Because obviously they'll tell you, or people will say a lot of times, if you're going to win a race, you got to win it during the week too and getting things done. So has it changed now that you guys are all under that one roof and doing things?
Yes. Moving into airspeed's been great for us. you know, just, I mean, it's so fresh, it's so new. The layout is very well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just really enjoy spending my time in there. And there's not a lot of shops where you get a lot of natural light. And they did a really good job of putting in a lot of unique 23-degree windows and all sorts of really cool things. So the atmosphere so far is great. It's not quite finished yet, open to the public, but, you know, we're up and running in there. And for me, I've really enjoyed just all the things that have improved so much from where we were originally for, you know, our temporary home, if you will. So it's great to be in where we're at now, and it's starting to become really familiar.
All right, we go to the road course this week. Next week, we're up to Richmond. So what are your thoughts as you get ready to go back up the short track racing up there?
Yeah, the words I'm about to say, I never thought I would. Last time we were there, I won a stage. So, yeah, we were really strong there the second time, you know, for the second race last year. A huge credit to that is what the teams worked, what my team worked on, and giving me a really solid race car where basically I just had to kind of just, you know, do my part, not overdrive the car, and just manage it. So, yeah, it was really cool to be able to return to that place, a place that hasn't been historically very good for me, and have the speed that we did. Ultimately, my mistakes took us out of it, but it was a big learning experience for sure. So I do really expect, with what the speed we saw at Phoenix, to go into Richmond and be a strong contender. And hopefully, you know, outrun my boss like I did last time we were there.
Thank you, Jason. Coming up, Chris Wilner catches up with Alex Bowman.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy in four tires, Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Money stop here for Ryan Blaney, four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. So glad you're with us here on our Tuesday evening get-together. After a 2023 he would love to forget, Alex Bowman is off to a solid start here in 2024. He sits 12th in points and has two top five finishes to his credit. Chris Wilner had the chance to catch up with Alex to talk about the start to his season and a look ahead to the racing at COTA this weekend.
Well, let's start with talking about Bristol, getting a top five finish. And I know that was a race that going into it, I don't think anybody expected to see happen what did happen. But how would you assess your ability to keep that 48 car up front and manage the tires, especially there at the end, and get a solid top five out of it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we had a plenty capable race car all day and had a couple setbacks throughout the race that kind of we would gain track position and then lose it all. So, you know, glad to be able to keep the tires on it really long the second to last run and kind of maximize that whole stint to get up into the top five. I wish we could have started further up front in stage three. I think we could have had a shot at it, but yeah, we had a really good race car, and I enjoy tire management stuff. It's kind of what I grew up doing, so I think it fit my driving style a little bit, and yeah, it'd be interesting to see if we see any more of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of smiles after the race, despite, I guess, what some other people think. But at the same time, you mentioned it too, you want to see more of it. So where's the line between the tire itself or horsepower? And on that conversation, where would you like to see kind of that perfect balance as we go into more short track races here in the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think was probably on the extreme side of things, right? Like we all rode around half speed, not even running wide open down the straightaway trying to save tires, which is probably a little much for cup racing. But I think we've all been asking for a tire that wears out and falls off for a long time, and we finally got it. We probably just got a little too much of it. So just trying to understand why that really happened, because it was the same tire as last fall. Couple guys have said track temp, but it's like 9 degrees different from last fall to this spring as far as track temperature, and it's really hard for me to believe that 9 degrees did that. So I'd like to see tires that fall off, you know, 65% of what we saw on Sunday, but yeah, it'd be nice to be able to go like 100 laps or so without having to worry about it and actually be able to run a little bit harder. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
And now we just completely 180 and go to COTA, one of the longest race circuits with 20 corners, and every corner it behaves differently for these cup cars. So going back there to a place you've been pretty good at, you know, where's the confidence level as we go to Austin?
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to get there. You know, I think it's a good test for our team to really see where we're at. I think it's one of my best racetracks. We've qualified and raced there, or raced well there throughout the all 3 years we've been going there. So excited to get there and unload and see what we have. The aero package being different and the repave or little bits of repave will be interesting to kind of have to adapt to. And, you know, that's always kind of been the fun thing about COTA. They've patched it so many times. It's got so many different types of surfaces through it. It's pretty tricky and a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to it. It's been a good place for us.
Of course, you've also were part of that awesome finish a couple of years ago with Ross Chastain and AJ. Do you replay that in your mind? Maybe like if you're in that situation again, what you do differently? I know it's been a couple of years, but you know, anything can happen.
Yeah, we got Chastain on that one for sure. He used AJ to get rid of me. So yeah, it was that was a good day for us. And even last year, you know, we had a good solid day. My cool shirt cooked me last year, so that was rough. I was hot inside the race car. I was dying. But yeah, I mean, it's a place where a lot of different things can happen. Different strategies can play out. And it's hard to be up front all day. You know, we saw those late race restarts at the end of the day last year and all the calamity. So the restart zone being moved will be another variable. But yeah, I'm just excited to get there. It's a cool racetrack.
Does that restart zone help or hurt, do you think? I know a lot of talk last year was the ping-ponging off each other. Does that solve anything or is it going to take maybe something else?
I think it'll help it for sure. You know, as drivers, I think we do it to ourselves. You know, we're very capable of getting through that corner without running into each other. We just choose not to. So, you know, I think we can all do a better job of that. But I think the restart zone maybe will help us protect ourselves from ourselves. We'll just have to wait and see.
Finally, five races in, what grade would you give this 48 team just in terms of where we're at this point of the season?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been where we need to be. Honestly, Daytona went really well. Atlanta wasn't anything of our doing, obviously getting caught up in that first lap crash, but Vegas is arguably one of my best racetracks, and we went there and we were not any good, honestly. And Phoenix, I thought we executed well during the race until that last pit stop kind of got us off on strategy. So, you know, I think we've been hit and miss. I think Bristol, we had a really good race car. So we'll just have to see how it keeps rolling. I think we need to get a lot more consistent. We have a lot of execution, things we can clean up and make better. And honestly, we've got to get qualifying better. You know, we can have the excuse of qualifying after the break at Bristol and how that slows the racetrack down. But it's kind of every week. So we need to get that turned around. It was one of my strengths when I started here, and there's no reason it shouldn't still be. So we just got to keep digging.
Thanks, Chris. Coming up, we'll give you a taste of the latest episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Hey, everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
This is NASCAR Live. Now back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. We continue to roll out new editions of our 10-episode podcast series on the 2004 NASCAR Cup Series season. One of the more forgotten moments from that year is the pit road brawl that took place at the Chicagoland Speedway between the crews of Casey Kane and Tony Stewart. This week's episode features the behind-the-scenes story of what went down that day. The date was July 11th, 2004, and the race was the Tropicana 400. It was the fourth trip for the NASCAR Cup Series to the mile-and-a-half Chicagoland Speedway. Coming off those back-to-back wins at Daytona and Sonoma, Jeff Gordon looked like he might be primed for a three-peat when he won the pole for the event and led the field to the green flag alongside Casey Kane.
Coming down to the line, 267 laps to go this afternoon. Green flag goes out as they race off to turn number one. Jeff Gordon at the bottom of the racetrack tries to get away from Casey Kane. He's got a couple of his teammates sandwiched in there also in the form of Jimmy Johnson and Brian Vickers. They go to one.
Advantage Jeff Gordon here on lap number one.
Gordon led the opening 14 laps of the race before surrendering the lead to Kane. Casey was out front when the first caution flag of the race flew because of an incident involving Kurt Busch and Ryan Newman.
Trouble in turn two. Ryan Newman is around, collects Kurt Busch. Both of them head on into the outside retaining wall, spinning down across the racetrack. Evasive maneuvers by Robbie Gordon and a number of others as they file past. Ryan Newman rolling away with a trail of fluid out the back of that Dodge. Kurt Busch rolls down to the apron. Heavy damage on the Sharpie Rubbermaid Ford. Smoke billowing from underneath that machine.
Following that caution flag, Tony Stewart, who had started 10th that afternoon, took control of the race and led for a 62-lap stretch. Shortly after the race crossed the 100-lap mark, Kane inserted himself back into the picture. It appeared that the two drivers with open-wheel racing backgrounds were the class of the field. After a caution because of oil on the track, Casey Kane and Tony Stewart led the field to green. On that restart, chaos ensued.
Here comes the field down to the line again. Dale Jarrett just in front of Casey Kane, the race leader. It's Tony Stewart trying to find a way to get by as he peeks to the outside in turn one.
And he gets into the back of Casey Kane, who spins and clobbers the wall. Three or four other cars get caught into it. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Jeff Gordon is involved in it. Scott Riggs gets a piece of the action as well. Dave Blaney also involved as cars spin and crash to the outside of turn number one.
Kane and the rest of his Evernham Motorsports team were crushed after seeing another possible chance at victory go up in smoke. But the contact on the racetrack isn't the only contact that went on that day. Following the accident, Kane's crew chief Tommy Baldwin and the rest of the number 9 crew went down to the 20 pit to confront Greg Zipidelli and his crew. What happened after that could only be described as a good old-fashioned brawl.
And the crew chief Tommy Baldwin Jr. for Casey Kane has made his way down and is on the war wagon in the face of Tony Stewart's crew chief Greg Zipidelli. Crew members pushing and shoving. His NASCAR officials get between one another, and now they're tackling one another, and a fight is on in the garage area, in the pit area. Crew members from both sides getting involved. Bobby Labonte's crew coming over. They were pitted nearby teammate Tony Stewart. Pushing and shoving in the pit area here at Chicagoland Speedway.
Well, you knew there was going to be some tempers flaring up for the incident that just happened down in turn number one. The NASCAR officials get in there trying to break it up real quick as the yellow flag is out for yet a fifth time. Let's go back over to turn two.
Casey Kane has climbed out of his Dodge Barney, appears to be okay. Dave Blaney, I believe, also as well has climbed from the AOL Chevrolet. Both cars almost certainly done for the afternoon with heavy duty damage.
And let's go back down to pit road.
Well, I'm not sure that it's over yet, Barney. These guys, some of the crew members for Casey Kane still involved, others trying to pull those crew members away and take them back to their pit area. But immediately when that happened, the fight broke out. Tommy Baldwin Jr. immediately ran down in the face of crew chief Greg Zipidelli, and they continue to push and shove through the garage area. And as they make their way toward the garage area on the pit lane, a number of other team crew members have come down here to see what's going on. And as we talked about, some of the Bobby Labonte crew members coming over to the aid of Tony Stewart's team. So a wild situation as what happens on the racetrack overflowing onto pit road here at Chicago.
Kane's team owner, Ray Evernham, was just as mad as his crew was.
Tony on the restart got in the back of Casey. We're leading the race. Tony spins him on the straightaway. And, you know, so that gets my guys mad, gets me mad. I'm walking back to the garage area where they're going to tow our car in, and I'm mad. Like, I'm mad. I look up, and all these people are running down towards Stewart's pit. And sure enough, there's my guys, and they're brawling. I mean, they're brawling heavy. And so we're trying to get everybody finished. So line them all up, and guys have got fire suits ripped and marks on their face. And I'm like, who started the fight? Who's? And they're like, oh, we weren't fighting. So we all get called to the truck, you know, and then me and Tony got into it, which I got on TV, and I said something about whooping his ass. And he's like, come on, whoop my ass.
While the 9 crew tried to downplay what happened to their boss, as you heard on the call of the fight, MRN's Adam Alexander was right in the middle of everything and remembers it vividly.
What I remember is Tommy Baldwin came down, right, and he goes up to the pit box to confront the 20 team. And I believe there was a bit of a misunderstanding and overreaction. I don't know that there would have been a fight, but Tony's guys see this happening. And it's like, you're not going to go after our guy. Now, whether or not Tommy was truly going after him, I don't know, Greg. But he climbed up on the pit box, and someone came over and got a hold of him, and then it was on. And I'm watching this transpire, and I was, if I remember right, I would say that Tony's pit box, which I was covering that day, was beyond the start-finish line. And so you had a pretty good view of turn one where Tony got into Casey on the restart. And so you see that happening, and then here comes Casey's team down. And they confront Tony's group, and then we had a wrestling match right there on the pit lane.
While it was obviously the on-track incident that caused the fisticuffs, Everett Hamm notes that there was a bit of off-track drama involving Stewart and Kane that also might have played a role into what happened that day.
There's a little bit more to the story. Tony and Casey had some off-track stuff going on that may or may not involve the young lady. I don't know.
You can download that episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Coming up, Kim Kuhn visits with A.J. Allmendinger.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Even though A.J. Allmendinger is back to full-time racing in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, he's still dipping his toe into the NASCAR Cup Series waters numerous times this year. He did so this past weekend at Bristol and will be at it again this weekend at COTA. Kim Kuhn sat down with A.J. to discuss this weekend's racing ahead of what's expected at the road course and what it's going to be like to have Shane Van Gisbergen as his teammate for the very first time.
This season marks your return to full-time racing in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. The last full-time seasons you were in the series, 21 and 22, you had 5 win seasons each, came out the regular season champion. Is that kind of the expectation this year? How hard will it to repeat that kind of performance?
Yeah, I that's a kind of a good question, Kim, because I don't really set the expectations. I don't know. You know, the ultimate goal is obviously try to win the championship. But the way this championship works, it's one race. And as we've seen at Phoenix, we got a lot of work to do. So I think it's more about the process of trying to get there. And I've always said, you know, I'd rather win 6 to 8 races and you make the Final Four and maybe you come up short than struggle all year, somehow make the Final Four and maybe steal the championship. So... But it's definitely on the Xfinity side, we got work to do. You know, when it comes to the mile and a half, I think we're not too bad. Some of the short tracks we got to get better at. So more than anything, it's the process of just trying to get better and really be competitive every week in the sense of not top tens or edge of the top fives, but, you know, leading laps and being up front every week is kind of what I'm hoping for, and hopefully we can get to that. But we're definitely not there right now.
If you're not there, are you approaching this season differently than you have in years past?
I don't mentally, because it's for me is always trying to first and foremost try to prove it to myself that I still can run up front and win races. You know, I feel like I've always felt that if I'm happy with how it's going, then the team will definitely be happy because I put those expectations on myself. But in all reality, especially Chris, knowing where we kind of where the Xfinity side ended last year and where the speed was, knew going into this year we had some work, and you know, like Vegas was positive and then Phoenix was very negative. So, you know, it's just trying to figure out what makes us fast each week and getting to that point. I feel like if we do that, then we can go up there and win a lot of races, but it's just trying to get to that point of figuring what those things are in the race car that makes it fast each week.
Regardless of whether or not you're racing Xfinity or Cup, do you feel like the leader amongst the drivers over at Colleague because of your experience? I don't want to say your age, but your tenure in the sport.
You know, for me, I've always offered to any of our drivers, if they want to talk or go over notes or do really whatever it takes to try to make them better, then I'm willing to do that. I'll never force myself on them to say this is what you have to do, or this is the Colleague way, or this is how we're fast in these cars, or anything like that. But I always want this team to succeed, and I've said that since day one, and especially now, you know, really 6 years part-time to full-time being a part of this organization. So anything I can do to help us succeed, I'm willing to do it. And but I'll stick to myself and focus on me. And then, you know, if I'll do whatever it takes if drivers need help to get better.
In a remarkable comeback by Colic Racing and AJ Allmendinger, mechanical gremlins yesterday, all kinds of accidents today, AJ Allmendinger gets it done and finds a way to win at Portland International Raceway.
You've won the last two consecutive Xfinity Series races at COTA. How optimistic are you that you can get three in a row?
I'm optimistic, but it's tough. I mean, it's the way we've gotten those wins the last couple of years are different. I thought last year we had a really fast race car, and then later in the year at a couple of the road courses, we definitely started to struggle. So we focused on some areas to hopefully go back to COTA and have speed in the race car. I really think SVG will be, honestly, the guy to beat because his driving style and some of the things he can do, I think, is actually going to be better in the Xfinity car than it is the Cup car, and we've already seen how that goes. So, but yeah, I mean, it's all about trying to show up there and just be at my best. And if my best is able us to win, then great. And if not, then, you know, I'll go home and just be happy with putting everything I have in it.
I'm glad you mentioned SVG because this is going to be the first road course race where he is a teammate of yours. How does that change or affect the dynamic of the team throughout the week, throughout the weekend, the prep you do, kind of everything you do to prepare for the race?
Yeah, I think COTA is probably the toughest just in the sense that SVG's never been in an Xfinity car on a road course. I still think he's going to be blistering fast, but the unknowns for him and not really knowing what to expect. And then I think after COTA, no matter how it goes, we can go to Sonoma and Portland and those places and kind of have a better dynamic of what he likes in the race car and what I like and how I drive and how he drives. So I think it's more just anything of unknown for him, but I think he'll get it on the racetrack like he's got on every other car so far and be right up to speed and be tough to beat.
You're playing double duty this weekend. We know there's significant differences between the Xfinity Series car and the Cup car, but on a road course, is it more or less glaring?
I think it's really the same oval in road course because it's the techniques. I mean, just the way the cars feel and drive are just so different now. But laps are laps, and I feel like the more laps you get on a racetrack and in COTA, you know, there's a couple of repave sections that we'll get in the Xfinity car and get to feel out a little bit. Maybe they're different, maybe they're not. And then we get in the Cup car and already know that. But so, yeah, I mean, I've always felt like laps are laps. And especially if you have success on Saturday, then it just makes Sunday a little bit more fun.
What would be the more proud moment, going three in a row in the Xfinity Series at COTA or getting the Cup race win at COTA?
Cup is this Cup. I'll take Cup any day. It's... You know, and that's tough because we're racing for the Xfinity Championship, but you don't get a lot of opportunities to win Cup races. We've been close there the last 2 years, so I'm always going to take a Cup win over anything.
We've talked a little about SVG, but there are other international drivers in the field at COTA and when we go to other road courses. What's the biggest misconception when a driver from a different series steps into the seat of a NASCAR stock car?
Well, I don't know if it's a misconception. There's a lot more banging, for sure. I think, you know, Jordan Taylor and SVG and Jensen and all those guys, Kamui, you know, it's like it's full contact, and I think it takes them getting used to. You know, Chicago for SVG was probably a little bit easier because we were all trying to get around that street course in the wet. So, but, yeah, it's – what you see on TV is reality, and it's not like that really in any other series. Obviously, in open wheels, you can't really touch, and because there's a, you know, big accidents happen when that do. And like supercars, like I was talking SVG, I don't even think they're allowed to touch. You touch somebody, it's a penalty. So it's full contact in NASCAR for sure.
You and your wife Tara welcomed baby boy Arrow back in the fall. What's been the biggest surprise about parenthood?
All of it, but I more than anything, just seeing how strong as women you are when you become moms, especially. Tara is super strong to begin with, but I mean, I'll hold Arrow for 15 minutes, and my arms feel like they're going to fall off. And Tara carries him around one arm. She's eating. She's doing stuff. So, you know, she makes it really easy, and it's so fun, especially over the last couple of months, and I'm sure it'll just keep going. His facial expressions, and you call his name, and he looks at you and smiles and things like that. But, yeah, just how amazing you women are as moms.
Have you figured out who's going to end up being the fun parent and who's the strict parent?
The more Tara and I talk, I'll probably be the fun parent, and she'll definitely be the strict parent. So, yeah, some of the stuff she's already said, like, he's not allowed to have sleepovers. You go to friend's house and sleepovers till he's like 12 or 13. I'm like, what? I was doing that when I was like 6 or 7, racing BMX bikes. I'd have to stay at a buddy's house every week to go race. So, yeah, I'll probably be the fun one, and she'll be the strict one for sure.
Thanks, Kim. Coming up, we'll highlight some of the best buzzer beaters in NASCAR history.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. The month of March for sports is known for buzzer beaters, and the clock never ticks down in NASCAR. The number of laps certainly do. We ask a number of drivers what comes to mind when we say the term NASCAR buzzer beater. Tim Catalfamo has their responses.
The month of March has arrived, and with spring in the air, one of the main things sports fans look forward to this time of year is the buzzer beaters that typically happen in college basketball's quest for a championship. While NASCAR doesn't necessarily have a sound that accompanies the finish of the race, our sport has had its fair share of madness and close finishes. For Chase Briscoe, the first finish that comes to mind is the closest one in NASCAR history.
The one I think of the most would probably be the Darlington race with Craven and Kurt Busch. Like, I feel like that's like a buzzer beater type race where it came down to the last, you know, second of the game or last second of the race. I would say that's one that I think of when I think of like a buzzer beater finish.
The white flag out this time. Kurt Busch leads by inches back to turn one.
The gloves are off. Craven is there and in turn one, half a car length back. Busch drifts high. Craven unable to make a move. They'll remain single file. Craven now to the inside.
Here they come off turn two, racing for the lead and the win. The crowd on the back straightaway is just going delirious. Busch, Craven, nose to tail. Here comes Craven up top. Busch goes up the block. Here comes Craven down to the bottom, trying to hang on. Both cars are loose and four.
Craven pours all the steam, pulls to the inside lane. They are dead even coming down to the line. This is going to be close. They lean on one another. Across the line, Ricky Craven gets the win.
That finish in the spring of 2003 at Darlington Raceway is still the closest in NASCAR history. Ricky Craven beat Kurt Busch by 2/1000ths of a second in a battle that went on for laps. It is the crowning moment of Craven's career, and one that Busch, even though he came up short, is still proud to have been a part of. There is actually one race that is tied for the closest margin of victory with that Darlington race. It took place at the Talladega Super Speedway in the tandem drafting era.
Gordon to the inside. It is Clint Bowyer to the outside for the final time.
Bowyer trying to hang on to the top spot. RCR trying to make it three in a row here at Talladega Super Speedway. About to be decided. Into the tri-oval they come. The challenge on down low. Jimmy Johnson pulls out front, but Bowyer looks like he held him off. No, they're saying Jimmy Johnson will get the win. In the Aaron's 499.
Jimmy Johnson beating Clint Bowyer in 2011 will certainly be a part of the Talladega highlight reel forever, as will two finishes in recent years involving the 2023 NASCAR Cup Series champion.
Blaney with a half a car length advantage. Here comes the outside line. Ryan Newman around the outside to the lead.
A heck of a push from Denny Hamlin. Ryan Newman is your leader right in the middle of turns 3 and 4, and he will lead the field off of turn 4 looking for the strike.
Ryan Newman, not there yet. They got to get through the trioval. They're crashing further back. Chris Buescher's in the wall. He gets airborne, lands on all four. The field steaming to the line, side by side to the checkered flag. Ryan Blaney wins the 1000bulbs.com 500 at Talladega. Ryan Blaney, with a move of the ages, goes to the inside of Ryan Newman. Ryan Blaney, by inches, picks up the win.
Off four for the final time, racing back to the checkered flag. Blaney out front. He's got to throw the block. He does. Diving down to the inside. Here comes Eric Jones. Here comes John Hunter Nemechek. They're crashing at the line. It is Ryan Blaney by 7/1000ths of a second over Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Ryan Blaney must just have a knack for the dramatic. Those finishes in 2019 and 2020 are tied for the seventh closest finish in NASCAR Cup Series history at just 7/1000ths of a second. Blaney admits that he didn't even know he was the winner of either one when he crossed the start-finish line.
Heck, we've won 3 Talladega races by combined like 8 feet, you know, and I've lost the Daytona 500 by, you know, 3 feet. So, yeah, sometimes you win them by that much, sometimes you lose them by that much, but, you know, it's just a crazy feeling. I mean, two of the ones, I had no idea if we won or not. You know, I mean, it's things happen so fast. You never know if am I a foot ahead or am I a foot behind. You know, it's kind of hard to tell where exactly the noses are because I'm not looking, right? You're trying to look where you're going and look in your mirror and things like that.
While Talladega and Darlington have both had thrillers over the years, the story of the best buzzer beaters in NASCAR wouldn't be complete without the closest finish in the history of the Great American Race.
Coming down to the line with one lap to go in the Daytona 500, led by Matt Kenseth, who started at the rear of the pack today. He's in charge with one more trip around Daytona.
One more try to the outside lane for Kevin Harvick. He's up to fourth. Hamlin pulls up in front of him. Denny Hamlin's going to try the high side. That'll allow Edwards to jump to his inside lane. Edwards looking for fourth. It's all Matt Kenseth.
Here they come up the Daytona Superstretch for the final time. The front three are fine right now in Kenseth, Truex, and Kyle Busch. But here comes Hamlin storming up the outside of the racetrack for second.
And that outside lane up to the second spot, led by Denny Hamlin throws the block, does Matt Kenseth. He's out of shape. Here comes Martin Truex Jr. to the bottom.
Checkered flag waving at the start-finish line. Who will get there first? It's Truex on the inside, Hamlin on the outside, and too close to call. Denny Hamlin showing up as the race winner by 1/100th of a second. Denny Hamlin has won the 58th running of the Daytona 500.
That was an amazing finish.
It doesn't get much closer than what we saw in the 2016 Daytona 500, as Denny Hamlin beat Martin Truex Jr. by the slimmest of margins to capture his first Harley Jarrell Trophy. To this day, Hamlin considers the final lap of that race to be the best he's ever run.
2016 Daytona 500 was my favorite win. Certainly, I feel it's still one of the probably the best lap I've ever driven in the Cup Series, just because of what it took to manipulate my car and the other cars around me to pull them back, push myself forward, and put myself in position to kind of drag race to the finish off of turn four. But what I remember about it was, you know, I had orders to stay in line till the white flag lap. That's what we planned on as a Toyota organization. And then once we crossed the white, I immediately pulled up. I saw the four car on the outside, and I said, well, I'm not going to just sit here and run behind my teammates. I'm going to at least give myself a chance to win.
While coming out on top of a finish like that has to be one of the best feelings you can have as a race car driver, there is the other side of the coin of seemingly having the rug pulled out from underneath you. Martin Truex Jr. remembers thinking he had it in the bag coming out of turn number four.
I just remember, you know, thinking, I think coming off of turn four, like, we got a real shot at it. Don't, you know, I think we got it. And we get to the line, it's like, we didn't get it. And just a huge heartbreak, you know, honestly, to lose by that margin in the biggest race of the year. So I think biggest memory for me is just the disappointment, I think, of that race. And I think everybody wants to be in those close finishes or a part of those storied finishes, like, but you never want to be on the losing end because it's a constant reminder. So every year we go back there, they show it, you see it, and you're like, damn it, you know, wish I would have done that a little bit differently.
In recent memory, we've seen things like Daniel Suarez beating Ryan Blaney and Kyle Busch by inches just last month at Atlanta Motor Speedway, along with Ross Chastain's Hail Melon. Circuit of the Americas, where all three of NASCAR series race this weekend, has even seen its fair share of drama, like 2022's thrilling final lap. with madness in the air. We might be in for another buzzer beater in the Lone Star State this weekend.
Thank you, Tim. Coming up, we'll relive a race from one of NASCAR's classic road courses.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
We're about to head for the exits here on this week's NASCAR Live. Before we do, I wanted to flash back to one of the OG road courses, one of the classic road courses on the schedule. COTA is fairly new to the NASCAR landscape. Well, there's a road course that used to be a hallmark on the early days of NASCAR. That road course was Riverside International Raceway. Let's relive some of the 1973 Winston-Western 500.
Diligently for hours, and yesterday he was so nervous that he didn't want to talk to anyone. They had so many things to do to the car. They took the shifting lever out and rebuilt it, making it stronger to be sure they could stand the stresses of this. And they spent 2 or 3 hours on that project alone yesterday. And they're ecstatic. They're all down there now, but no one is cheering. No one's getting carried away with this thing. That would not be the mark of a Penske crew. They're waiting for the finish, as are everyone here, 51,000 strong at Riverside, California. Now, into turn nine comes the red, white, and blue Matador. Out of turn nine, here comes the Matador. Down across the line, it is Mark Donahue coming across. Here he is across the line and going up into turn number two.
Mark Donahue, who knows this race course probably as well as anybody in the racing business, with the possible exceptions of George Fulmer and Dan Gurney. And with his record of success here, you've got to say it's just about dead even. Donahue going through the S's, driving them just as smoothly, as steadily, and as quickly as he has all afternoon. He's up toward six.
Mark Donahue, the red, white, and blue American Motors Matador, the only Pennsylvanian in the Winston-Western 500, is right behind Bobby Unser as he goes down the short chute and back to Ken Squire.
It's about a lap and a half to the first victory ever for American Motors. A lap and a half away is victory in the Winston-Western 500 to Fritz Duda.
Mark Donahue did not attempt to pass the traffic as he came in here to turn number eight. How sweet that smell of victory must be for him right now as he anticipates one more lap here at the Winston-Western 500. He's under the Champion Bridge and Mike Petula.
He has moved through traffic under the Champion Bridge. Last year, the Penske Panzers humbled the Team McLaren on the Can-Am circuit. Mark Donahue won at Indianapolis, and today, Mark Donahue appears headed for victory at the Riverside 500. Ken Squires in the tower.
Halfway through turn number nine comes Mark Donahue, Newton Square, Pennsylvania. And among the victories he has had, I'm sure that Indianapolis would mean a whole lot to him, but to win in NASCAR competition after last year is going to be something very, very special for this entire racing team. They don't like to finish anywhere but first, and that was the situation a year ago. They just couldn't have it together. It was their first year out, and many times after race, it was only a chuckle, but you knew that underneath that kind of a wan smile, it was a lot more boiling, and right now, it's all coming out as victory for them as they're in the last lap, and we go to Bob Steinbrink.
And Mark is already up toward turn six. He hasn't slowed down a bit. Bill Scott.
Mark Donahue, of course, will remember the day, January 21st, and this, the Winston-Western 500, as Donahue goes into turn eight on the last lap. Very smoothly he does as he comes around turn number eight. He makes the short right-hand off-camber turn, then the little left-hand jog as he goes down the back straightaway. He's headed for the start-finish line, and he's right near the Champion Bridge and Mike Petula.
Just as so often this afternoon, Mark Donahue has a clear shot. No traffic at all. He's moving very easily. The last lap under full power of this Winston-Western 500. And there's a big change of image as American Motors, Mark Donahue's Matador, will go to that start-finish line and win the Winston-Western 500.
You can hear that entire race right now wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd like to thank A.J. Allmendinger for joining us, also Alex Bowman and Tyler Reddick. I'm Mike Bagley. For the rest of the MRN crew, we thank you for joining us as well. Don't forget, download a fresh episode of NASCAR Live Wide Open on Thursday. Join us for NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series racing from COTA this weekend. And we'll chat with you again Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, next Tuesday, right here on the Motor Racing Network. Until then, so long, everybody.
NASCAR Live is a production of the Motor Racing Network with studios in Concord, North Carolina.
and was brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Today's broadcast was produced by Trey Downing, Pat Jaggers, and Julian Council. The executive producer for MRN is Ryan Horn. Remember to visit MRN.com for all of the latest news and information. NASCAR Live is produced under an exclusive license with NASCAR. Any use of the accounts and descriptions contained in this broadcast must be with the express written permission of NASCAR and the Motor Racing Network.